Welcome to the Lab Up Leaders series, a showcase of global change agents and experts in healthcare and laboratory management. Here's your host, Lab Up Global Founder, Robert Farias.
We're pleased today to be joined by Joseph Kwaga Kumbu. Joseph, pleased to meet you. Glad to have you with us.
Thank you, Robert. I'm happy to have you too.
So Joseph, let's get started by learning a little bit about you. Can you give us a bit of your academic background, please?
Okay, thank you very much. I have a Bachelor of Science degree in zoology, though I had intention of reading medicine and surgery, but it was unfortunate that I couldn't make the cutoff marks to study medicine. I made some couple of trials, it didn't work. So I decided I want to study zoology and practice zoology. So I have a first degree in zoology. Then I have my second degree, my master's degree in applied entomology and parasitology from University of Jos, Nigeria. So at the moment, I am also having I'm a PhD candidate in the same zoology, applied entomology and parasitology, but with more focus on mosquito-borne diseases and malaria transmission.
Great, okay. And yeah. From perspective of your academic background, did you have some industrial placements or particular internships that you had to go through as part of your program?
Yes, and that is exactly where my journey into my career started. So at the end of my year three first semester, I started looking out for a place to do my industrial training. So I had applied to the hospitals where some of my friends were doing it. I was rejected. I went to another hospital, at least to work in the lab. I was told zoologists cannot work in their lab. If I had read something like microbiology, they could have gotten a space for me. But for zoology, there is no way they can have me. Apparently, they are not familiar with the zoologists working in the lab. They all know zoology to be a study of animals, and that was it. So I kept trying. So there is this uncle of mine, which I had seen him with a vehicle. He worked with the Carter Center, Carter Center's Global 2000 in Nigeria. So I saw him working on guinea worm, and I was like, guinea worm? I studied guinea worm in the university. So this might be a good place for me to work. So I went to that place, and I was accepted eventually with his help. So that was how I got into the Carter Center's Global 2000 program in Nigeria as an IT student, 6 months IT student. I had opportunity of learning a lot. At the time, Carter Center has started the lymphatic filariasis program, the Global 2000 program, to actually commence a journey to eliminate the disease in Nigeria. So it is actually an institution where they do a lot of research and they do a lot of implementation as well. So I got deeply involved into the research part of it, identification of mosquitoes, which are the vectors, and also the diagnosis of the parasite. So that actually opened me up for a lot of career progression in the area of neglected tropical diseases.
Great. So let's talk about your professional career, Joseph. So upon graduation, were you working immediately after your bachelor's degree? Did you work until after your first master's degree? What was your progression from a paid employment perspective?
So with the experience I have during my industrial training, it occurred to me that with a bachelor's degree, zoology is not a very saleable point in the Nigerian market, labor market. So I had an intention. I said, okay, I decided to narrow it down to something I can easily practice. But my full focus was actually going into the academic, because I believe that with zoology, research was actually my focal point. So and with research, I need to advance in my academics. So I have decided from the time being that without master's, I am not going to get into the field. So immediately after my master's degree, I waited after my National Youth Service Corps, which is a mandatory 1 year service. I now picked up an MSc form in applied entomology and parasitology in the same university, because my university happens to be the only one that was doing that combination. And I felt that with entomology and parasitology, it positions me to go either way. And it gives me a more comprehensive picture about disease control, which as at that time, my focus was actually in malaria. But one interesting thing also happened during my industrial training. It happens that one of my lecturers, Professor Adum Pam, was also a consultant to the CASA Center. So at the end of my industrial training, he saw that I was very good in diagnosis of the parasite, both in terms of vector dissections and in terms of the identification of the parasite in the blood, human blood. So he now encouraged me to proceed with that same study at my project level, which happens to be the area he was also doing his PhD. So he supported me to now have my BSc project in that same area. So that also grew my interest. So when I came back for my master's degree, I was really focused on continuing my work in that same aspect. So that was how I came back. I picked a form, even though there was a 1 year delay, I held on to it. At some point, it felt as if I made a wrong decision, but I had a strong conviction that master's degree was going to open a lot of ways for me in the future. So I held on to it, and I came back, started my master's degree. So that was my journey. So with the master's degree, it was actually a very good area for me to proceed. That was how I continued with my master's until along the line, I now got to, there was this consultancy from an oil company. They were looking for an expert in mosquitoes because they had an outbreak and it killed some of their expatriates. The malaria parasite killed them, and they were looking for ways to unravel how the mystery actually happened. So they now summoned a team of entomologists, and my project supervisor was on the team. So he got me involved. So that happened to be the very first consultancy I did with him. He happened to be my mentor afterwards. We did that consultancy, and that opened up a lot of ways for me.
And how long were you with that energy company?
So it was a 2 years contract. It was a 2 years consultancy program. We did that every year, and we submitted that report back to them.
Okay. Yeah. And once that was completed, what were your next steps?
So once that was completed, I also got another consultancy with the CATA Center. They were starting their first malaria program in Nigeria, in Abia State and Plateau State. And they also recruited me, my mentor, now Professor Palm, to be a slide reader. We did that job. Then after that, in the course of my master's degree, that was when Nigeria was scaling up intervention for lymphatic filariasis control in Nigeria here. So there was a general lack of capacity in terms of diagnosis. So the Federal Minister of Health and other international partners that were working in Nigeria, after trying so many other people, they now found us. And that was how we became, myself and my supervisor, that was how we became the main consultants establishing baseline for the commencement of mass drug addiction scale-up for the control and elimination of lymphatic filariasis in Nigeria.
Great, and that was through the CATA Center you had mentioned.
No, this wasn't through the CATA Center. By this time, we're working on our own. CATA Center is one of the organizations supporting. Because of the sheer size of Nigeria, one partner cannot actually support every state. So in the entity state space, there are a lot of NGOs, non-governmental and developmental organizations that are supporting the states, different states. So every NGO has a responsibility to provide evidence to commence interventions. And this is how we got involved. There were some states that were actually supported by the Federal Ministry of Health. There were some that were supported by UNICEF. Some were supported by the WHO. So we all got involved in providing the evidence to whether commence intervention or to not commence at all.
Fair. And from that program, once that program, how long was that program?
So this program lasted for about 2 years. We started that from 2010 down to 2011. As a matter of fact, it was in this program that I actually got recommended for my first international NGO job.
Great. And what did that end up being?
So before my first international NGO job with the Helen Keller International, I started with Nigerian Institute of Medical Research as a project student working in the molecular and entomology lab for the control of malaria in Lagos. So after 1 year as a project staff, there was an opportunity to join the mainstream service. So I applied and I was recruited as a junior research fellow. So I was doing the field work and the laboratory work for malaria field work for data collection, collecting adults and immature mosquitoes and analyzing them in the laboratory. I did that work for 7 months. Then my supervisor, my then mentor, then was approached to recommend someone for the program management position with the Helen Keller International in Nigeria. So he recommended me. As at that time, then my whole focus was actually to finish my PhD and return back into the academics. But because of the slow pace at which things were working in the civil service, I felt if I have an opportunity to join the NGO, I might be provided with all what I need to deliver. So, and considering that I was actually part of those that provided evidence to commence intervention in this area, I felt it will be a thing of joy for me to actually see how these programs are implemented and people are treated of these diseases. So I finally got recruited as the National Program Coordinator, Lymphatic Neglected Tropical Diseases in Nigeria with the Helen Keller International. Yeah, that was my first job, the NGO.
And so let's discuss that then. So in terms of the role that you played while you were at Helen Keller, was it sort of a balance between policy and practice? What was your what was the structure of your role?
So my role was actually to inaugurate neglected tropical diseases platform. So before now, entities were run in as a vertical structures. You have onchocerciasis running parallel with any other programs. But as at this time, the Nigerian government, in line with the WHO policy, now was integrating all the NTDs program to run as a unit. And my whole role was actually to inaugurate this program in the states that didn't have them. One of them was Katsina State. Katsina State, where the Helen Keller International was supporting, had no NTD structure. And we have then were in a consortium with other NGOs in Nigeria. And the HKI had a responsibility to deliver a lot. So I got on board, and my job was actually to inaugurate this program in Katsina State, then to also conduct advocacies to ensure that state governments increase their funding and spending on NTDs, to also report to donors, to also advocate and spread the news, create awareness about NTDs. My responsibility was also to support other multi-sectoral, other sectors that had something to do with neglected tropical diseases. For instance, we have WASH, water and sanitation. Most of the NTDs actually have something to do with WASH. So my role was actually to coordinate the participation of all these other sectors to actually have a unified approach to the fight against NTDs.
Great, okay. And how long were you at Helen Keller then, Joseph?
So I was at Helen Keller from 2016, first April, to 2014, first April, to 6th March, 2016. So I spent roughly a year and some months at Helen Keller International.
Okay. So after those 2 years, or after those that brief period at the Helen Keller, what were your next steps?
So there was this NGO that was coming into Nigeria, Evidence Action. Evidence Action has been a very strong partner supporting school deworming project globally. And then they were actually supporting the biggest school-based deworming program in the world, and that was in India. And they were actually coming into Nigeria. So they needed a consultant to help them set the structures and also to scale up to other states. So I applied. I was actually their first recruit in Nigeria as a consultant, as a program manager, supporting the implementation of a school-based deworming program for the control of schistosomiasis and sexually transmitted hepatitis in southern Nigeria. So I joined Evidence Action. Then, before other staff were recruited, I worked with Evidence Action to inaugurate and scale up school-based deworming programs in 4 states of Nigeria, starting with Cross River State. We went to River State, then we went to Oyo State, and we went to Ogun State as well. I worked on that program. My core responsibility was to actually scale up school-based deworming program, which was quite new then, and the expertise were actually lacking. So I did that, and at the end of the day, the programs are running so sound in those states now.
So Joseph, from Evidence Action, I understand you took some additional steps from there. What was the next step for you?
So Evidence Action was actually implementing just school-based deworming program, which was for soil-transmitted hermits and lymphatic and schistosomiasis, which then we are still at the control stage. So having gone through all the cycles of the program, and again, I didn't have opportunity to be involved a lot in activities at the national program. I was actually getting bored, and I was beginning to feel that my expertise are not actually being utilized very well. So I decided to, I saw these opportunities my friend told me about an opportunity with CBM, Christopher Blinding Vision. It's a German-based NGO that has been in Nigeria for a very long time. So they were looking for a technical specialist in the NTDs. So I saw that as an opportunity that will bring me back to the national program. And now increase my influence at the center where a lot of activities have started happening as programs move towards the last mile of elimination. So I accepted the offer and I came down to Abuja as is the program as a entities program specialist for the Nigeria country office. At the CBM, it has given me opportunity to be actually the head of NTDs in Nigeria. And it has availed me with opportunity to also contribute my quota to the national program and to the state's program where we support. We actually have a big portfolio. We are supporting trachoma elimination. We are supporting onchocerciasis elimination. We are supporting lymphatic flares elimination. And we're also into other humanitarian programs. We're doing a lot of WASH, and we're also doing a lot of sustainability for those that have actually come down with NTDs as well, supporting them with the morbidity. So I feel I am doing a lot more now than what I was doing before.
So got to use your skills more broadly for an impact. Joseph, help us talk a little bit. You've mentioned quite a few of the NTDs till now. Help us understand a bit some of the prevalence, some of the presence of these NTDs in Nigeria, and as well as maybe either regionally or globally, if you can speak to it. Can you give us a sense of what's the status at the moment of the NTDs? I understand several of them are in the elimination category, where the global aim is to eradicate them completely. Can you speak to that, please?
Okay, thank you. So globally, 20 diseases have been designated as neglected tropical diseases. Out of this, a number of them are targeted for elimination. Now, we have two categories of NTDs. We have the Innovative Disease Management NTDs, the IDMs. Those ones, you just manage them. Then you have the preventive chemotherapy NTDs, which are the big five. These ones, they can actually be treated and prevented using drugs. And these drugs are mostly donated by the pharmaceutical organizations. We have Merck, we have Pfizer, we have Johnson & Johnson that have been donating these medicines through the WHO. I must say that NTDs is the biggest drug donation program in the world because of the sheer number of people that are actually impacted by this disease. So in Nigeria, the big five NTDs, we have the onchocerciasis, we have schistosomiasis, we have soil transmitted herpetiasis, we have trachoma, and we have lymphatic filariasis. These diseases, out of these five diseases, as of today, Nigeria is targeting three of them for elimination. Let me start with the onchocerciasis. Onchocerciasis program started as a control program. When we have programs like African Program on Onchocerciasis Control, that program ended in 2015. A research was conducted in Burkina Faso or so, and they either Burkina Faso or Senegal, and they discovered actually that onchocerciasis can be eliminated. Then at that point, the focus now shifted from the control to elimination. As of today, at least we have two states. We have five states that have actually eliminated onchocerciasis. But because the focus is on the whole state, on the whole country, you cannot really stop until every other state in Nigeria have achieved elimination before Nigeria will be marked as being one of the countries that have eliminated onchocerciasis. That fight is going on very well. In 2015, I was a member of the committee set up by the Nigerian government, the National Onchocerciasis Elimination Committee, to advise the government on steps and guidelines that will be used to eliminate onchocerciasis, and that has been going on very well. Another disease that's actually of interest in Nigeria is actually lymphatic filariasis. Lymphatic filariasis program started with an elimination in focus, and the approach has been very consistent. As of today, out of over 580 local governments that were endemic for lymphatic filariasis at baseline, 51 of them have stopped MDA because they have met the criteria. Transmission has been interrupted in those local governments. But the other component of the disease management for lymphedema and hidrosis surgeries, which is also a complication arising from the lymphatic filariasis, the management is ongoing. And at least every local government in Nigeria have received at least one dosage of drugs, albendazole and ivermectin, that is used for the treatment and elimination of lymphatic filariasis. Nigeria is actually the second most endemic country for lymphatic filariasis in the world, after India. Then we talked about trachoma. Nigeria is the fourth most endemic country in the world for trachoma today. Now, trachoma is actually caused by a bacteria that finally leads to blindness. So it has two aspects of intervention. You have the administration of antibiotics to stop the transmission. You have the surgeries to correct the complication arising from trachoma infection. Then you have facial cleanliness to actually clean the eyes and stop flies that are perching on those mucus to now transmit it. Then you also have environmental improvement. The whole strategy for intervention is called SAFE: surgeries, antibiotics, facial cleaning, and environmental improvement. These are all the strategies that are being implemented in Nigeria as recommended by the WHO to actually fight against trachoma. As we speak today, many states, 24 states that started trachoma intervention, have stopped MDA because the assessment have proven that transmission is no longer ongoing. What is happening today is actually the case management, the TT surgeries for those that are already suffering from the complications arising the trachoma infection.
Joseph, let me ask you a few questions, if I may, about the diagnostic capabilities required to identify the presence of these diseases. So at several times you had mentioned both in your practice or in your studies from a zoology perspective, as well as the performance of diagnostics that you're performing to understand the vectors themselves. Can you help us understand in Nigerian context? We appreciate that the medical lab scientists are the ones who have a role within the clinical facilities in the medical side and the hospital settings to be performing a variety of diagnostics. Where does this fit in? Where does the type of diagnosis and the methods of diagnosis fit in with the different roles to perform those diagnoses at the moment?
Okay, so my very entry point into the fight against NTDs was through the diagnostics. So as at that time, it has to be with every NTDs, because NTDs is a group of diseases and their diagnoses are actually unique from each other. So let me start with the first one, which is the lymphatic filariasis. My entry into the NTD space was actually through the diagnostics. When they started the program, there was a general lack of capacity in terms of establishing baselines, diagnostics, and that has to do with from the human side and from the vector side. So my expertise was actually in the identification of the mosquitoes themselves, and to identify the parasite, to dissect mosquitoes and identify the presence of parasite in them. I had this expertise, and a lot of people did not have the expertise as at that time. Then I also had the expertise. Then we were using tick blood smear to identify Mucellaria bancrofti, which is a causative agent for lymphatic filariasis in Nigeria. So we could do that. And a lot of people still did not know how to identify this parasite, even the diagnostics. So some people that were recruited then could not identify that, and the program started looking for competent hands, and they found us. So with that, we got involved and built the capacity of other people that were able to do that at scale. Coming to there are new diagnostics tools now that have made this method of diagnosis unpopular. Why is it unpopular? Because the parasite has a nocturnal periodicity. It comes out in the blood only from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. So what it means is that for you to detect it in subjects, you have to compare them to be awake almost throughout the night. And because of the nature of it, people that have some, there were some myths that were associated with it. People were like, why is this done in the night? So it made a lot of people to hesitate to participate in the diagnosis. As at then, that was the only way of doing this diagnosis. They were also using the ICT cards to do the mapping, immunochromatographic test cards. But as of today, there is a new diagnosis tool that can actually pick this parasite even in the daytime. That is the FTS. The FTS is donated to Nigeria by the WHO program. So this was actually the area that I actually came in, but there are still some entities that are still not being able to get good diagnostics. And this is one area that research is actually should be going on seriously to get this easily. For instance, in our last NOEC, National Onchocerciasis Elimination Control Meeting, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation made a presentation to support the program with the diagnosis to locate the black fly breeding site, which is a very important procedure in making sure that elimination of onchocerciasis is achieved. So this is one other area that is actually a very good area to support in the entities. Then talking about the onchocerciasis diagnosis in human beings, then we had the skin snips. The skin snip, where you have to graft a skin from someone and culture that skin to see if the microfilaria will actually come out, grow from the skin and be viewed. That was very painful, and a lot of people were actually running away from the diagnosis. But as of today, we have OV16. There are some PCR diagnostic tools that are actually being used, and the skin snips are no longer very, very, these skin snips are no longer recommended now that we're approaching the last mile. The same thing with the black flies. The black fly, we used to dissect them to see if the parasite is growing in them. But now we are now using the PCR techniques that is actually very useful to now pick even smaller traces of the infection in the flies. In the diagnosis for sleeping sickness, human sleeping sickness, which is also one of the entities in Nigeria, the diagnostics tools are not very sensitive and they are not much. They are using rapid tests now, but the sensitivity is not that strong. So there are chances of being missed, that some cases might be missed. For schistosomiasis, we are still using the CATOCARES technique. The program has not moved so much into the elimination phase. So the diagnosis tools are still the CATOCARES and urine filtration technique. The same thing for schistosomiasis, for soil transmitted herpes. For trachoma, trachoma is actually, the diagnosis of trachoma is not actually laboratory based. It's actually in the field by just inverting the lead and then checking at some specific indications to know whether the transmission is ongoing. So this is about the diagnosis, the diagnostics involved in the NTDs in Nigeria as of today.
Thank you, Joseph. Can you speak to one other topic as well? So you had mentioned the challenges of graduating with a zoology degree and finding placements and finding employment opportunities. That was some time ago. Can you speak to some advice that you would have for younger people that are in the space, that are currently in a degree in zoology or considering one, or early careerists in that space, and just your general advice for people in that area?
Okay, my first consideration actually is to say that you can't wait until you get to 400 levels before you start thinking about what you want to do. That may already be late. What actually helped me was to have realized long time before I graduated what I wanted to do. And one thing that can be actually very helpful is for you to identify that lecturer that is already working in those particular areas. What gave me a lot of courage was because of how I saw lecturers in my department that were actually working. My mentor was actually my lecturer. So that is one window you can actually utilize to actually go very fast. Getting a mentor early in your days and your lecturers or some senior colleagues who are already practicing can provide that link for you. I was trusted to do work because of the person I was working with at some point before I stood on my feet. But first and foremost is to have a career plan. What do I want to do in the short term, in the mid term, and in the long term? The strategy might change and you might fine tune that as you move along the line. But at the beginning, you have to sit down and x-ray what you want to do, evaluate your capacities, and look at where you want to strengthen to get the results you want to get. And you have to ask yourself, what gap am I going to fill? But starting as a researcher, you cannot miss the point. If you have a mindset of being a researcher from the word go, there are very good chances that you can switch that into any other area at all. Since research is actually based about solving problems, your problem-solving abilities will grow stronger and you will have ability to identify them and solve them along the line. So my advice in a nutshell is to say that, look, you have to start early, because if you don't start early and you meet those that have started early, they will always beat you any other time you come into contest. So you start early, get a mentor. Your lecturers are not your enemies. And again, you have to work on yourself extra hard. Look into the industry and see the areas you can put your hands on. And you have to be consistent. You have to be consistent. If you are doing a master's degree, it has to be in line with your goal. The goal and the project. That it even has to do with your IT. Me, for instance, I did my IT in mosquitoes. I did my project in mosquitoes. I did my master's in mosquitoes. I did my PhD in mosquitoes. But again, I was doing that in the context of mosquito-borne diseases. But I studied parasite in general. So that gave me the opportunity to work in a broader spectrum of parasites and vectors. But the core of it is to invest in your future, determine where you want to go, look at the gaps you want to fill that will take you to that place, look at the people that can actually help you to grow in that same direction. As you work with your mentor, you have to pay the price. You can't start today and start thinking you have to start reaping results the next day. It doesn't work that way. You have to walk your way, follow all the rungs of the ladder, and then you grow up.
Joseph, let's talk about that in particular, about about working your way through the ladder and the context. What should somebody expect as a general timeline that guides them from graduation through the time where they're either leading some research or they're performing, they themselves are leading an activity or leading a research project?
Wow. That again has to do with the kind of background. So the minimum you can take after your master's is you should look at a period of 5 years.
That's fair. And again, it's more just as a reality check. I want to share that with people. I think I've also met quite a few people who believe they'll be starting such things immediately upon graduation. And so I think I just wanted to hear your perspective on that.
Okay. It doesn't actually work that way because people need to trust you. You need to walk your way. And sometimes it might be quite slow and it might be frustrating as well. Because for you to be trusted with some high level responsibilities, you have to prove, you have to have handled that under someone's tutelage at some point, and will be trusted and will be recommended to have done a good job. So from your BSc, you proceed for your master's degree, then you start working with someone, then at some point, you will have grown to now manage some things on your own as well. So it might be a minimum of 5 years, it might be more. But I think 5 years is a good catch with hard work moving up.
And I think it's important to state also that while you're doing that hard work along the way, that's producing valuable results that are contributing to bigger understandings or diagnostics of patients or contributions in larger research programs. Right, so it's that work, in addition to being a step in the ladder, is actually a contribution to a larger project and a larger impact that you're having while you're doing that work.
Yeah, the whole idea is not just to invest in any project. You have to invest in projects that are current, that are actually going to be usable, not just to recycle all the projects that have been happening before that are not easily applicable in the day-to-day lives. And if you are working in the poor resource settings, your projects have to be tailored to be usable even at the lowest level. In that way, you will have trained your head over and over, ask all the important questions to make sure that the project you are coming up with is something that can be usable almost immediately. Or even if you're not usable immediately, it can actually be usable in the short term with just a bit of modifications.
Good. Okay. Great. And so, Joseph, you had touched on the topic of mentors. And at this time, I'd like to invite our guests to identify and recognize some people who've helped you along the way. Some people who have either mentored you or provided support along your both academic or professional career. Anybody in mind?
Yeah, I will first of all talk about my cousin. My cousin in my primary school, he actually sowed a seed in me. He told me he wants me to read health, that he wants me to be a health professional right in my primary school. So that got into me. I got interested in everything that had to do with health. And that projected me to start thinking about reading medicines. So in the school I was attending, in my secondary school I was attending, we were not offering sciences. So without sciences, there was no way I could actually grow up to be the medical doctor I had wanted to be. So that compelled me to change my school, to move from that school to another school that was actually studying, offering sciences. So with that seed he sowed, he now projected me to start making choices based on the decisions I had made before. So my cousin actually opened my eyes. Then my uncle, who actually supported me to get my internship with the Carter Center, was also a great leap for me. Dr. Kefas, he was a very good help. Then while getting to the Carter Center, then my mentor, Professor Pam, who is the current HOD of Zoology Department, University of Jos, was actually the first person that told me, look, Joseph, I want you to stick to this lymphatic filariasis program. I want you to stick to this, do these dissections. And he even provided some resources to help me complete my BSc project. So he was very helpful in that work. Then my other mentor, I could say, is my late father, who was very, very instrumental to all I did. He was interested in all what I was doing. I could come back from school and he would listen to me, we would talk about my plans, and he was very excited to watch me grow. Unfortunately, he didn't live to see when all the aspirations have started coming up, have started yielding fruits. So I can say that these are actually my big mentors. Then a shout out to a PhD student I supported. So in the course of my work, I supported a lot of PhD students that were trying to finish their programs. And one of them is now a professor, Professor Musa Mustafa. He's also a dean of studies in one of the universities in the North now. When I worked with him on his PhD, he also encouraged me a lot in the course of my work. And I also have to acknowledge his support in all what I have been doing today. So I think these are about the people, then my siblings that have also helped me. I've watched a lot from them. They have been a very good influence to what I do today. Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you very much for that, Joseph. Thank you for your time today. It was great to learn more about you and NTDs, and we look forward to seeing you again soon.
Thank you very much. I appreciate this opportunity. Thank you.
To make a suggestion of someone that would make a great guest or topic you would like to hear more about, please visit us at labop.org. That's labopp.org.